Hello, hello. And it's the Pinky Pod. Here I am again, whether you like it or not. Wait, you chose to be here, right? After all, you pushed play. Well, here we are, another episode. And if you listened last week, and if you haven't, why not? Go listen to it. It's a good one. I declared that it was spooky season. Yes, that's right, in September. It is spooky season. I say it's spooky season all year, but it's particularly good right now. We got to get that jump start on October, Halloween. Are you thinking about it yet? What are you going to dress up as? You going to dress up? I feel like probably it's going to be really crazy this year if summer events are any indication, because with two and a half years of a lot of people staying cooped up and locked up and whatever, you know, because of COVID, a little pandemia there, a lot of people have decided this summer, from what I can tell, that they are just over it and they want to go out and do stuff. A lot of events have been overwhelmed, you know, like so many people show up that they couldn't handle it. And there's been a lot of traveling. A lot of my clients, I'm a barber, a lot of my clients, you know, going places, this and that. You probably heard about flight cancellations, all kind of craziness. I'm feeling like maybe Halloween is going to be a bit crazy, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Last year, actually walking around, there was a lot more people than I expected. You know, people have relaxed a little bit last year. Lots of decorations, very clever ways of, well, the first year in particular, very clever ways of having candy without having to touch anybody. Some people just left it out on tables and, you know, here, take what you want. Some people, like one house I walked by, my friend and I, they were like up in the second floor window. We heard somebody go, "Do you want some candy?" You know, and they had like a big tube from the second floor that they would shoot it down. Just fun, inventive things. I'm also thinking that Thanksgiving and Christmas is maybe going to be nuts. Shall we place bets on it? You could even let me know, you know, let me know how things start going in your neck of the woods, what kind of festivities start happening. I'd be curious. Let's get to the subject though, shall we? So last week I kicked it off with Grand Guignol, right? The horror, le horror, and the most murdered woman in history, the original Scream Queen, right? Paula Maxa, who was murdered some 10,000 times on stage. Crazy. If you didn't listen to it, again, go listen to it. I thought we would stay in the region, since that was Paris. We're going to stay in France for this episode. And we're going to talk about another legendary beastie, perhaps. You know, is it or isn't it? Was it true? Wasn't it? Let's find out. A woman tending her cattle in the forest near Lagagne in June saw something terrifying. Her bulls scared it off, whatever it was, but not long after, a 14-year-old girl was killed. This thing had red fur streaked with black. There were reports of up to 210 attacks in all, 113 of which resulted in death. Death. Oh no. It was such a major event. King Louis XV decreed that the French state would help to slay the beast. And this was 1765. What was it, you ask? This thing that's inspired movies such as one of my favorites, Brotherhood of the Wolf, which, by the way, stars Vincent Cassel, Monica Bellucci, and Samuel Le Bihan. Bihan, I'm sorry if I mangled your name, sir. It's also, by the way, known as Le Pacte des Loups. What is it? What is it? It's the real werewolf of the time, known as La Bête du Gévaudan, or the Beast of Gévaudan. The red hair with black streaks that this beast had, you see, was also described as looking like a wolf. I think I just said that really horribly. Shall I leave it in? A wolf. It was described as looking like a wolf as well. Yeah, whatever. Let's carry on. After the king's proclamation, Jean-Charles-Marc-Antoine Vermessel d'Anneville, who apparently was so important that he had to have several names to contain his importance. And Jean-Francois, who was actually, obviously, the real badass because he only needed two names, or really one because it's hyphenated. Anyway, they were sent out to kill the beast. Well, they failed, badasses or not. They were not enough names between them to defeat the beast. So then the king sent Lieutenant of the Hunt, the Wild Hunt, was it, per se? Francois Antoine. Yes, I'm in a mood, so sue me. It's Monday. Francois Antoine bagged him three giant gray wolves, and that did not stop the attacks. Dude, that's the wrong color, first of all. They said red. And then a local hunter, just some non-fancy dude, you know, named Jean Chastel, shot a wolf. That was June 19, 1767. And guess what? The attacks were declared fini. But were they really? Well, let's back up and get some details first, shall we? Because that's what you're really here for and not my silliness. Between 1764 and 1767 is when these attacks occurred. Scholars agree it may have been a wolf or wolves, but there are a few who say that it might not have been a wolf at all. And we'll get to that. Jeanne Boulet was that poor 14-year-old girl who was the first recorded victim, and she was tending to a flock of sheep at the time. 2 months prior is when that woman with the cattle, I guess she was somewhat attacked, but her, as it was described, her bulls and her cattle protected her. But she said she had seen a wolf, but not a wolf. You know how it is. You're scared and you're looking at something you can't figure out. It was a wolf, but not really a wolf. Valid. Valid description, right? Right. To give you a little idea of how France was at the time, shall we say, this was on the heels of the Seven-Year War, and they had lost battles to Prussia and the British. Louis XV had lost several overseas colonies. So they were in kind of a slump, you know. And the beast gave everyone something to rally around. And, you know, it was making a lot of news, as it were. Something to distract people. You know, let's say it. Something else to think about. The beast often attacked and partially ate women and children. On the occasions that it was men, though, the men were usually alone. So from what I gathered, the beast would sometimes attack like groups. Bounties were offered in Gévaudan, and groups would search the countryside. You know, people just started forming their own groups. A little bit about that area, and I'm going to skip the ancient history, as fascinating as that is, because we're trying to just stay into this timeline, and we're really just here for the beast. But it was early 16th century. The area was very wealthy in that time. And it had a lot of religious wars, though, which sort of ruined the county, I guess. That's what I read. The Huguenots settled in the city in about 1550. And Huguenots were a religious group of French Protestants. I don't know if, well, okay, we're not going to talk about the Protestants. They held to Calvinist traditions. That's like the Reformation. There's your little idea of that. Gévaudan actually ceased to exist under that name after the French Revolution, March 4th, 1790. It is now the department of Lozère, from what I gather. It was at the time, or for a time, a crossroads of pilgrimage trails. I didn't dig into that to see where they were doing their pilgrimages to, but people crossed through there. And the languages are French and Occitan. So that's pretty cool. The area is, if you're looking at a map and you look at France, it's south, very, very south, not quite smack dab in the middle, just slightly east of the middle. You can Google that. It's pretty cool. Now that you have a little bit of information on the region, let's get back to some local heroism. January 12th, 1765. 10-year-old Jacques Portefeuille and his group of seven friends, whose ages ranged from 8 to 12, were attacked. Like I said, sometimes they were attacked in groups. But being the badass little urchins that they were, Jacques led them in a counterattack, and they just used sticks. They used sticks, y'all, to drive off the beast. And Jacques was rewarded by none other than the king with a paid-for education, fully paid for. This is said also to be what prompted King Louis to send official hunters. Maybe he just couldn't be upstaged by a bunch of little poor children. I don't know. But he finally took some action. By this time, the bounty on the beast was something like 6,000 livres, which is an old French unit of money, from what I gathered. And I tried to find a way to convert it, but that proves to be rather difficult, and I got tired of trying to figure it out. Math. Nobody wants to do math. Because I read one thing that a livre was equal to the value of 1 pound of silver. I also read that you could just do it by first converting it to pounds sterling. I don't know. I started looking up formulas, and nobody seemed to have a good one. And when you just Google to try to convert the livre, it does show you pounds. So I ran with that. I went with that. That would make it approximately $7,000. I don't know what that would convert to today's time, because I got tired of math by that time. But imagine $7,000, the equivalent of $7,000 in the 1700s. Yeah, a lot of people were probably going to go out there and be quote-unquote heroic, right? Well, we have another act of heroism, although I don't think it was for the bounty. There was Marie-Jeanne Vallée. She was 19 to 20 years old. She was attacked August 11, 1765, while crossing the river Desaige with her sister. With a bayonet, which was affixed to a pole, she actually impaled this beast, but it still got away. Scary, right? I stabbed it, and it still ran away. Sorry for the bad French accent. No, I'm not really sorry. I'm having fun. She earned the nickname Amazon for that, and also the Maid of Gévaudan, which, you know, was a compliment. So there's a couple of badass incidents there, and if you don't know what a bayonet is, you know the old colonial era type, you know, for the Americans out there, rifles, right? And you have, it's like a knife that is stuck to the end of the rifle, because you could only shoot, like, what, muskets, you know? They were really tough to reload. You couldn't just sit there and bat, 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 bat. So when you're up close and you already fired your shot, well, now you just stabby stab them. But back to our story. By September 20th, 1765, when Francois Antoine, a 71-year-old gun bearer of the king, shot a large wolf by an abbey near Chazes. He was given money and titles, and the wolf was taxidermied and sent to the royal court. But wait! The attacks renewed in December, according to some sources. This beast showed no fear of cattle, though, where the previous one had, according to an article by a Parisian Illustrated Review that they wrote in 1898. And what did the royal court do about these new attacks? They ignored it. After all, they had their stuffed beastie, you know, probably displayed somewhere around the house, in a hall or in a bathroom, somewhere to scare people and showed it off. So what did they care? Like, no, we already got it. They insisted it was dead. A number of attacks occurred in June, later, the following June, and thus a local nobleman, Marquis d'Apichet, decided to organize a hunt. They'd had enough of this nonsense. The crown wasn't listening to them anymore. June 19, Jean Chastel is when he shot that guy, I think I mentioned him a minute ago, shot a wolf on Mount Michet. And they did the smart thing, an autopsy. They did find human remains inside this wolf and what was just described as some non-wolf-like characteristics about the animal. And the attacks ended. Did that mean that was the one? I don't know, because by this time, a few wolves had been shot. Maybe it was all of them. But what were some of these descriptions that made people think they weren't wolves per se? Some people said things like as large as a calf or sometimes a horse, the reddish-gray coat with a panther-like tail, a strong panther-like tail, a black stripe down its back, talons on its feet. And drawings of the time, a lot of them appear lupine. I will share those, of course, on my Instagram, Pinky_podcast. The beast's MO was to stalk its prey and then ambush. And normally it would go for the throat. At least 16 victims were decapitated by attacks. Wounds were usually around the torso up to the head, sometimes the limbs. I imagine defensive wounds, right? You know, fighting back. It liked to prowl in the evenings and mornings. Some of the theories, because of course you know there are theories, lest you think, you know, witnesses were simply just confused. There are theories, some of which might make sense. Eurasian wolves, which is actually a common gray wolf. An armored war dog. I should have Googled that, shouldn't I? I was just going down the list, but really? I don't know. Have you ever played Dragon Age? Because my brain just immediately went to, Mabari? What? They wouldn't hurt anybody. Unless you did something mean to it. If you know, you know. Another theory is striped hyena. Of course, it's not native to that area, but you know how humans are. Somebody might have had one in a private collection, or there might have been something in a zoo somewhere and it escaped. Because that's usually what happens. Other theories are, could be a lion, and it would be the same thing. Did it escape from some private collection? And people did shit like that. They still do shit like that. Or a zoo. Prehistoric predator, like Hyaden, which to me looks like a hyena-wolf hybrid. Like, I could see it, and it does fit some of the descriptions. Again, I'll share photographs. It was carnivorous, and it lived in Eurasia and North America during the Eocene to Miocene eras, which is approximately 56 million to 34 million years ago, up to 23 million to 5 million years ago. I know, that one, of course, doesn't probably hold much water, because you would think we would have noticed one in all that time still mucking about somewhere. But you never know. You never know. Sometimes animals are discovered. Can you hear the air quotes? I say discovered by us to this day. But I think maybe that doesn't mean they're new. It could be something that there's so few of that we really didn't see them. Granted, a larger animal, you think somebody would, but who knows? It's not, you know, the world is a big place. Who knows? And then, of course, our favorite theory, right? Right? That's why you're listening. Werewolf. Werewolf? Werewolf. Okay, come on. You love that movie. You know you do. Well, I do. I also like the direwolf theory because, yeah. They were popular even before Game of Thrones, okay, but we definitely like the ones on Game of Thrones. I mean, direwolf just sounds badass. It's a direwolf. By the way, those did exist. That's what they used to call. You know, since I didn't write it down in my notes here, let's take a quick little Google. The direwolf is an extinct canine. It is one of the most famous prehistoric carnivores in North America, along with its extinct competitor, Smilodon. Don't you love that? Smiley! The dire wolf lived in the Americas and Eastern Asia during the late Pleistocene and early Holocene epochs, which would only be, compared to the other one, would only be 125,000 to 9,500 years ago. That's, it sounds like a long time, but it's really not when you think of millions and millions of years ago. It was named in 1858. 4 years after they found the first specimen. There are two recognized subspecies. Oh, can I say this? Enocene diris gedai. No, I'm sure I can't. I'm sure I'm not saying that. And Enocene diris diris. Diris, diris, diris. No, diris, diris. The largest collection of fossils of a dire wolf have, let's just call it a dire wolf that's way cooler, have been obtained from the Rancho La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles. They have also found remains of them, though, across a broad range of habitats, including plains, grasslands, some forested mountain areas, arid savanna of South America, and the steppes of Eastern Asia. Sites range in elevation from sea level to approximately 7,400 feet. They rarely find any, though, north of 42 north latitude. I assume a cold. Why are you telling me latitudes? Is that like the Arctic? Probably. There have been maybe only 5 unconfirmed reports above that. So that would probably be because temperature prey, you know, they wouldn't maybe have prey to eat. Makes sense. It's about the same size, or was, as the largest modern gray wolves. The Yukon wolf and the Northwestern wolf weighed on average 132 pounds, you know, the present wolves. And a Deerus Deerus was probably 150 pounds. It's a pretty good size. The skull and dentals, you know, dentition, match those of C. lupus, but its teeth are larger with greater shearing ability. And its bite force at the canine teeth, you know, the fangs, was, like they're still around. Who knows, maybe. I like to think so. They were in Game of Thrones, right? CGI, I know. Was stronger than any known canine species. Pretty cool. What was some of their prey? Horses, ground sloths, mastodons, ancient bison, and camels. The extinction event is said to have occurred during the Quaternary extinction. It's called the Quaternary extinction event. And a lot of its prey died as well. So they all kind of went away at the same time. I could keep going on that. I just wanted to look it up for a second, though, because it was one of the theories. I find that fascinating. What about you? But we'll get back to our werewolf, werewolf. Another suggestion is that it was a serial killer. I guess it wouldn't be beyond belief that someone might drape themselves in furs and prowl around, kind of like what happens in that film that I mentioned, actually, Brotherhood of the Wolf. It's deeper than that, and it's almost what I remember. I own the film. I should rewatch it. It's almost a cult-like thing, as I recall, and the leader is hiding a deformity. And that's all I'm going to say about it, okay? He's hiding something for a while. You should go watch it. Brotherhood of the Wolf. There are plenty of people, though, who think that that theory of a serial killer is nuts. They think, or, you know, maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe they don't say nuts, but they just don't believe that somebody would walk around in furs and do things like that. I guess they haven't listened to true crime podcasts. They do think that it's possible that a human had an animal accomplice, probably an animal that it trained to attack. You know, who knows? There's also theories of that it was a lion. I think I mentioned that. But to expand on that a little bit, most of the commoners, common people of the area, would not really know what a lion looked like. And I'm actually thinking even less so hyenas. You know, hyenas would be way more exotic to them. Lions have resorted to humans as food before. There's a infamous tale of the Lions of Tsavo, who killed 130 people in a year. It was a pair of them. And the range of attacks in Gévaudan also matches a lion's range, hunting range. And hyenas, though, striped hyenas anyway, striped hyenas are not known to attack humans, so that theory gets a little shakier. Maybe if they were starving, though. I think a lot of animals that don't normally attack humans when they're starving, and I think normally that would be true with lions and, you know, man-eating tigers, etc. But once they get the taste, as they say, then they keep going for it. One hunter did describe what he saw as being a hybrid of something, like, you know, quote, the father being a lion, but what the mother could be is still remains to be seen. And that was Jean-Baptiste Duhamel. So if he's a hunter and a regular type of hunter, he probably would know what a lion looks like. Many think it was not one, but several wolves. That's the prevailing theory. Gévaudan had a, quote, wolf infestation at the time. There are statistics that show that between the 17th and 19th century, wolves attacked humans 9,000 times, and it was usually rabid wolves. So you see, there's always a reason for it. However, during the time of the Gévaudan attacks, none of the victims, you know, the surviving people, ever contracted rabies, which, you know, of course suggests that at the very least they were not attacked by a rabid wolf anyway. And the number of attacks, and I guess the areas where they would take place, very much points to that it couldn't be just one. And another little tidbit I found about this is that there is a Days of the Beast, a yearly tourist thing that happens in that area that was Gévaudan, where you can basically go with the tour guide and follow in the footsteps of this beast's reign of terror, and they'll also educate you about what was going on at the same time. And I forgot to write down the author's name, but one of the guys that was on that tour wrote a book, The Beast of Gévaudan. You can probably find him on Amazon.com. And that's about all I have on that, because I wanted to, staying in this werewolf theme, I wanted to read you some other stories. It was one of those lists, right, is where I got the ideas in the first place about, I just Googled, you know, real werewolves. So I'm going to read you the others of those that I found. The Livonian Werewolf. Werewolf confessions could be quite peculiar. Take Thies of Kaltenbrunn. Living in Swedish Livonia in the 17th century, again, we have another 17th century, Thies, T-H-I-E-S-S, someone tell me. Thies was widely believed among his neighbors to be a werewolf who had dealings with the devil. Local authorities didn't much care. After all, Thies was in his 80s. What harm could he do with a few tall tales? But when they brought him in for questioning on an unrelated matter in 1691, he voluntarily began divulging details of his werewolf lifestyle, with many inconsistencies. According to his account, Thies had given up lycanthropy 10 years prior to his appearance before the judges. So in 1681, he just decided to quit. I didn't know you could do that. I've never seen that in any of the werewolf legends, but he decided to quit. I'm done with that life. I'm not about that life anymore, y'all, but I'm still going to tell you about it. Before that, he and other werewolves would change into wolves on St. Lucia's Day, Pentecost, and Midsummer Night. They would do this by donning magical wolf pelts, although he later just changed his story and said they just stripped naked and turned into wolves. So he went from, well, we put on stuff like a skinwalker is what it reminds me of. Did any of you guys out there see The Northman, that crazy Eggers film? You know, the guy who did The Witch and The Lighthouse, he did his first big blockbuster. And funnily enough, was starring the guy, Alexander Skarsgård, who played Eric Northman. I like to joke about it and go, so is this the Viking vampire's origin story? Have you seen The Northman? I bring it up because they have berserkers in it. And one of the things they might do is wear pelts, and it was wolves. There might also be bear berserkers, and they really thought they were, but they were humans in like skins. No, you with me? You're not? Okay, never mind. I just, look it up. It's true. Like they really thought that. Not even joking. Okay. So this guy goes from saying that they were wearing that like berserkers, you know, whatever, to like, no, we just frolicked around naked and acted like wolves. They would maraud the countryside, killing farm animals, and then would cook them to eat them, which is another thing I don't think werewolves do. And he was asked, how did wolves cook meat? And he would say, well, we were still human. We weren't wolves when we did that. And then his story got really weird. He then claimed that werewolves were the agents of God, and would travel to hell to battle the devil and his witches, bringing back grain and livestock that witches had stolen. In fact, he said he had done so just the year before, which contradicted his earlier claim of renouncing lycanthropy. So, this guy, I think, was just on drugs. Or, if we're going to be unkind, maybe he was senile by then. It was later revealed that Thies was not a devout Lutheran and indeed practiced a form of folk magic, which involved charms and blessings. So the judges, of course, ordered Thies flogged and exiled. And what happened to him after that remains unknown. Oh, I think the guy was just a little off his rocker, or maybe he was pulling their legs. Unfortunately, it got him beaten. Another story now. The Wolf of Ansbach. Again, we have the 17th century. Are you sensing a theme? This is not actually far off. Well, no, it would be during the same time as the vampire hysteria, you might call it. People were believing in a lot of shit around this time, okay? And there are reasons for it. Maybe I should delve into that for another episode. The Wolf of Ansbach. 1685, a wolf was terrorizing and killing humans in the town of Nessus in the Principality of Ansbach in what is now Germany. That wasn't unusual, but the town's chief magistrate, Michael Leicht, had just died. He was a cruel and unpopular man, and it was said that the wolf visited Leicht's residence, so it was just a small leap for those people to claim that the wolf was in fact Leicht, who had returned as a werewolf due to his sins. So apparently that belief there is that you could become a werewolf by sinning. I'm sure it's a devil-related thing, right? Not so different from what they would think about vampires, you guys. The wolf's death was rather uneventful. The people organized a hunt. They chased it into a well and killed it. What they did with the body is some people would consider a bit gruesome, though. They paraded it through the streets, prepared it for display by cutting off its muzzle, dressed it in human clothes, put a wig on its head and a mask on its face so that it would resemble Leicht. They hung the body from a gibbet so everyone would enjoy the sight. After some time, and I assume when it just got too stanky, the wolf was removed from the gibbet and the corpse preserved and put on permanent display at a local museum because, yeah, we like that shit, don't we? Poor wolf. For a little bit there, again, man, I can't stop with the Game of Thrones references. It's kind of reminded me a little bit of when they put the dire wolf's head on Rob and paraded him around that way. I hated that scene. Poor wolf. Yeah, I said poor wolf, not poor Rob. Poor wolf. It wasn't his fault. I digress. Next one. The Werewolf of Alleritz. Widely thought of as Spain's first ever serial killer, Manuel Blanco Romasanta is unusual for a werewolf, operating late in the mid-19th century. Romasanta was an unusual case in a few ways. He was born in 1809 and was actually raised as a girl until he was approximately 6 years old, at which point all it says is that doctors discovered he was male. He then, you know, grew up, got married, worked as a tailor. His wife died in 1833. He took up a traveling salesman, you know, trade, and liked also to guide travelers around Spain and Portugal, so he was a tour guide. His first known murder was Vicente Fernandez, the constable of Lyon. Fernandez was found dead in 1844 after he had attempted to collect a debt from Romasanta. Rather than face the law, Romasanta ran away to Portugal. By the way, there is a 2004 film called Romasanta, which of course stars Julian Sands, and some of you out there know why I say of course, because Julian has played a few supernatural creatures. Seems to be his shtick there for a while. And he does portray Manuel Blanco Romasanta. And the still that they're showing me here from that film is as a wolf. So they're apparently running with it, okay? I have not seen this film. Let me know if you have. During this time, the actual Roma Santa murdered several people who had hired him as a tour guide. It's kind of, I mean, that's kind of clever, but at the same time, it said that he was really not very smart. He was not cunning. Because people noticed him selling off those clothes of the murdered people. And so rumors circulated that he was also selling soap made with human fat. Fight Club, anyone? Fight Club? Somebody, he should have copyrighted that idea, eh? Okay, actually, it makes me stop and wonder if Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club, knew about that. Because, you know, authors, like I'm an author, we pick up little tidbits all over the place, and you never know when they're going to work their way into a story. Just a little something for you there. Finally, a complaint was lodged against Roma Santa, and he was arrested. He did confess to 13 murders, but here's where it gets weird. He said he had been cursed with lycanthropy, but when he was asked to demonstrate a transformation, you know, how he became a wolf, he declared that the curse had passed, and he was no longer afflicted. Because, of course, basically, instead of pleading temporary insanity, he pled temporary wolfy. That was bad, wasn't it? He was acquitted of four of the deaths because forensics of the time found that those deaths, that those had occurred from real wolf attacks, which, even though I'm pretty sure he wasn't a werewolf, that's really interesting. He was found guilty of the other 10 murders. A phrenological examination of Roma Santa by the doctors, which I think that's just like touching their head, right? The bumps and shit, isn't that what that is? Like, it's a terrible science. It's not even science. But they did determine that he had invented his curse, which I think we could figure that out without groping his head. And he was sentenced to death. But they commuted that sentence to life imprisonment at the request of a French hypnotist who believed that Roma Santa was suffering a delusion. And so they petitioned a stay of execution because he wanted to study the man. So I wouldn't necessarily say it was out of the goodness of his heart. He wanted to make a lab experiment out of the dude. 1863, a newspaper reported that Roma Santa passed away that year in prison from stomach cancer. And there we have that. The Werewolf of Bedburg. One of the most famous werewolf cases is Peter Stump with two P's, a wealthy farmer accused of being a serial murderer, cannibal, and werewolf in Rhineland in 1589. There's actually a woodcut by Lucas Mayer that depicts the events of his, I don't want to spoiler alert, but it depicts some events of this. So it's so famous there's a woodcut, probably more than one. In the years preceding Stump's arrest, the country town of Bedburg had been plagued with horrors. It started with dead and mutilated cattle. I wonder if they thought it was UFOs. I don't think that they were into the UFO craze at that time, sorry. Bodies of townsfolk were also found in the fields, you know, after that started. Initially, people thought it was a wolf or wolves attacking, but they couldn't catch them. Finally, in 1589, a hunting party managed to corner the wolf with its hounds. When the humans approached, according to reports, they didn't see a wolf. They found Stump, a human. The most damning piece of evidence was that Stump's left hand had been lopped off. And the reason this was a big deal is because the wolf had had its left forepaw cut off. Since, of course, the wolf and the man had the same injury, they figured they must be the same. Stump did confess, but it's a questionable confession. He was tortured, including being on the rack. And you know how confessions under duress, you can't necessarily trust them because you just want the torture to be over, right? Same with witchcraft trials and all kinds of other things and the Inquisitions, because of course they would eventually confess because you're being tortured. And then did it save you? You might die anyway, but at least you weren't being tortured anymore. What he told them is that he'd made a pact with the devil when he was 12. He had been given a magic belt, which allowed him to turn into a wolf. He confessed to killing 14 children and 2 pregnant women. He said he ate parts of them and ravished their bodies. He killed his own son and had a sexual relationship with his own daughter. He was sentenced to die in a very awful manner. He was fixed to a breaking wheel. And if you want to know what that is, it's also AKA an execution wheel, also AKA Wheel of Catherine, or just the wheel. A torture method used also for public execution, primarily in Europe, through the Middle Ages and into the early modern period, by breaking the bones of a criminal or bludgeoning them to death. A picture of it, which I could share, honestly just looks like a wagon wheel. It was the practice was abolished in Bavaria in 1813, and in the electorate of Hesse in 1836. The last known execution by wheel took place in Prussia in 1841. In the Holy Roman Empire, it was a, quote, mirror punishment for highwaymen and street thieves, and was set out in the Sachsenspiegel for murder and arson that resulted in fatalities. So they used it for that. And possible Frankish origins. I'm looking up a picture of it. So they would be affixed to the wheel, almost like a crucifixion. Like a crucifixion. So I remember when I first read it, I thought, oh my God, were they tied to it and like rolled? But it's a apparently like a crucifixion. Some other images of it show, again, I'll share these, Pinky_podcast Instagram or Twitter at podpinky. They show people like the wheel is horizontal on top of a big pole, and they show people laying on it, draped over it. That's one of the depictions. I think I'm going to say they probably beat them and rolled them. It looks like they were a bit inventive with different ways that they used the wheel. Yeah, someone else here, another depiction of it shows them, again, horizontally, and somebody beating them with a stick. And then there's the one that I thought of in Toulouse, 1762, the death of Jean Calas, and it's vertical, and they do have him on the edge of it like they were rolling it, but rolling it in place. That makes sense to me. Not like I'm applauding this, but if you wanted to do it with the least amount of effort, why just tie him to it and beat them? You do it like the vertical one, and then you let the wheel do the rolling with the crank. That's just, you know, work smarter, not harder. I'll set it. I mean, this is spooky season and we are being macabre. I'll set it. So this dude was fixed to a breaking wheel, had his flesh torn from his body with red hot pincers. His limbs were broken with the blunt side of an axe, all because they didn't want him to rise from his grave, which that's more vampiric than, I don't think there's too many stories of werewolves rising from the grave. I could be wrong. And then just to make really sure, he was beheaded. And his head was placed on a pole with the figures of a breaking wheel and a wolf on it as a warning. Like images, you know, like, hey, look at, this is what happened to this guy. Don't fucking do it. Try, fuck around and find out. His daughter and mistress, he had a mistress. And this is such bullshit. But it's so common. It was so common. His daughter and mistress were flayed, strangled, and burned. They were victims. They were definitely, no doubt, victims. But I'm sure they figured that they consorted with him, and they must also be touched by the devil. So I don't know why they had to be tortured, though. You could have at least been humane about it. But not in these times. No, of course not. No, we can't do that. It is not known whether or not Stump actually committed these crimes, because again, you can't really take that confession seriously. The region at the time was very deeply affected by the Cologne War, which, if you want to know a little about that, was a conflict between Protestants and Catholics, which really devastated the area. This is Germany. It was a historical ecclesiastical principality of the Holy Roman Empire within present-day North Rhine-Westphalia. The war occurred within the context of Protestant Reformation in Germany and the subsequent Counter-Reformation, and concurrently with the Dutch Revolt and the French Wars of Religion. It was also called the Seneschal's War or the Seneschal Upheaval, and occasionally the Sewer War, which I think is very apt. It's just, yeah. Okay, no, I won't. We won't get into religion. So they were really, but I think that that might help you put in perspective why they were so vigorous about this. Just the religious stuff. Stump was a Protestant convert, okay? And the region had been seized by Catholics in 1857. And his death was then to Catholics' advantage, and because his wealth, he was very wealthy apparently, would go to them. In addition to that, Stump's death could maybe have served as a warning to other Protestants. Whew! Wow. That one was gnarly, y'all. That was gnarly. Shall we do, I'm just about at the end. I mean, that was the end of that list. Shall we do one more? Shall I, quote unquote, live, recorded but live, Google? Let's do it. Real, where, can you hear the typing? I am now just on the webpage. Werewolves. Werewolves. Wow. What knockers. Why, thank you, doctor. Let's see if I can find some more. Our werewolves went. No, we're not looking for that. We're looking for a list. Or, oh my goodness. Is this a joke? I just came across a site called I Am a Real Werewolf. DianeWerewolf.wixsite.com. Now, there's nothing really there of a story. Never mind, I got excited. See, that's what happens when you just do this live. All right, there are actually websites of people who apparently think they are werewolves. And no, I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised, okay? Let's go to mysteriousuniverse.org because they're usually interesting for lists. This isn't even necessarily a list. From what I see here, this is by Nick Redfern, December 5th, 2021. Real werewolves, do they exist? He wants to let you know that he's not talking about classic folkloric werewolves that shapeshift. He is actually talking about the growing number of people who have seen what can only be described as upright wolves. Oh, we're getting into cryptids. Yeah, sure, why not? Okay, let's go with it. Reports of such things have been around for decades, maybe even centuries. They really began to take off in Wisconsin in the early 1990s, and mostly seen in and around the now infamous Bray Road. I think I did a Bray Road episode, or I touched upon it. There was a whole thing I watched on Travel or Discovery or one of those that shows a lot of that stuff. But yes, I've heard of the Bray Road monster. Maybe you have as well. Linda Godfrey is who got this person interested, it sounds like, who is the author of numerous books on cryptids. Yes, actually, I remember Linda being on that Bray Road. Yes, they interviewed her on that show that I saw. That's right. I think it was actually part of a larger series. The something triangle. Oh my God, my memory's leaving me. The something something triangle. All right, let's get on with Nick here. I investigated a number of cases years ago in the UK. Interestingly, not a single case I came across in the UK involved a creature that, like a classic werewolf, could change its form. They were solely able to roam around on two limbs. Are we looking at the same thing? From the United States to the United Kingdom? That's what the situation seems to be, despite the unlikeliness of the affair. Here's one such case that came to me a few years ago, but it actually occurred decades ago. Using the name of Wes, he related the following. I encountered a werewolf, for lack of a better description, in England in 1970. I was 20 years old when I was stationed at RAF Alconbury. That's Royal Air Force. I was in secure weapons storage area when I encountered it. It seemed shocked and surprised to be caught off guard, and I froze in total fright. So I can just imagine them staring at you. Ah, a human! Ah, a wolf! I was armed with a .38 and never once considered using it because he was frozen, I guess. But there was no aggression on its part, and I could not comprehend what I was seeing. He continues, it is not human. It has a flat snout and large eyes. Its height is approximately 5 feet and weighs approximately 200 pounds. It is very muscular and thin. How is it thin if it's 200 pounds at 5 foot? That doesn't make sense to me. Does that make sense to you? I mean, height, weight thing. It can't be thin and weigh 200 pounds at 5 feet. 6 feet, maybe. I mean, I know muscle is dense, but okay, anyway, that just doesn't make sense to me. It wore no clothing and was only moderately hairy. It ran away on its hind legs and scurried over a chain link fence and ran deep into the dense wooded area adjacent to the base. I was frightened, but the fear developed into a total commitment of trying to contact it again. I was obsessed with it. I was able to see it again a few weeks later at a distance in the wooded area. I watched it for about 30 seconds, slowly moving throughout the woods, and I will never forget my good fortune to encounter it and to know this creature truly does live amongst us. Now, the author here, Nick, says, now things get even more controversial. In 2005, Linda Godfrey was contacted by a man, a military whistleblower, we might say, who was an expert in the field of remote viewing. Remote viewing, I should do an episode on that. I know I thought about it. That is an actual study that the military did of one of the things I remember about it is almost like clairvoyance, right? Where people can be in one place and see something far away. Like it's sort of a psychological thing or not exactly telekinesis. I'm forgetting how they describe it. Anyway, that's a real thing. So this is interesting. According to Godfrey's Edward Snowden-like source, not my words, theirs, the U.S. government has uncovered data suggesting that the Dogmen are a very ancient alien race that closely resembles the ancient deity of the underworld. Which one, dude? Oh, sorry. He answers that. Anubis. That's who. Godfrey's informant also discovered, via remote viewing, so take this as you will, they were seeing things in their mind, okay? Remote viewing. Discovered that the Dogmen can jump from location to location via portals or doorways in the fabric of space and time. So consider the matter of a certain wave of werewolf sightings that occurred in central England in 2007. It was a wave that attracted the attention of not just the general public, but of local and national media. It's intriguing to note that each and every encounter with the marauding man-wolf occurred in and around the same place. It was a certain cemetery located in central England's expansive woods known as the Cannock Chase. The Commonwealth War Graves Commission notes, during the First World War, when there was a large military camp at Cannock Chase, which became the base for the New Zealand Rifle Brigade, there was also a prisoner of war hospital with 1,000 beds, and both camp and hospital were used as the burial ground. Cannock Chase War Cemetery contains 97 Commonwealth burials of the First World War, most of them New Zealanders, and 286 German burials. There are also three burials of the Second World War. The 58 German burials in Plot 4 were all brought into the cemetery in 1963 as part of the German government's policy to remove all graves situated in cemeteries or war grave plots not maintained by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. So when it comes to the monster of these graves, it was briefly infamous in April 2007, thanks to a story that appeared in the pages of a local Stafford Post newspaper. According to newspaper staff, a rash of sightings of a werewolf-type creature prowling around the outskirts of Stafford have prompted a respected Midlands paranormal group to investigate. West Midlands Ghost Club says that they have been contacted by a number of shocked residents who saw what they claim to be a hairy wolf-type creature walking on its hind legs around the German War Cemetery just off Camp Road in between Stafford and Cannock. Several of them claim the creature sprang up on its hind legs and ran into the nearby bushes when it was spotted. What do you think? Let me give a little props here to Nick Redfern. Works full-time as a writer, lecturer, and journalist. He writes about a wide range of unsolved mysteries, including Bigfoot, UFOs, the Loch Ness Monster, alien encounters, and government conspiracies. Nick has written 41 books. Go, Nick! Writes for Mysterious Universe and has appeared on numerous television shows on the History Channel, National Geographic, and the Sci-Fi Channel. And I'm going to bet that I have seen him. There's a little picture of him here. I can't tell. He's wearing the skull cap. But I wonder if he was on that show I saw, the Monster of Bray Road. You guys, this, of course, has given me other ideas for maybe things we can look up. I don't know. I don't think I've done a Dogman episode. I have seen them on TV. Have you guys? I think that's a good way to finish out this episode with the werewolf. I tried not to do that too loud and close to the microphone. And there you have it. There is the werewolf. I gotta stop making that. I was gonna say werewolf, the werewolf again. I need to watch Young Frankenstein. Frankenstein. Because I can't stop referencing it. And if you've listened to me for the past couple of years, I do it often. All right. Thanks for listening. Please check out my socials at PodPinky on Twitter. Pinky_podcast for Instagram if you want to see visuals of the things I talk about, rave about, rant about, fuck up about, all that shit. And go to my official website, pinkyswordpress.com, where I have blogs, pictures, links to my merchandise. I forget anymore to mention the merchandise because I don't know, nobody wants to buy anything. I don't think anybody ever sees the links. It's so hard to promote yourself. But I do have t-shirts and things that I've designed, some of which are related to the podcast, others, and that's my art, like the art that you see, if you see the pictures for my Pinky Pod, the woman in the top hat, I did that, in case I didn't say, I probably said it like 2 years ago. I made that. I used vector art, actually. That's my original artwork. And I have t-shirts with that, other things. Redbubble, you know, those sorts of places. Like I said, go to pinkyswordpress.com. I am an author. I'm working on the omnibus. Hey, you guys, as of this morning, I'm almost up to chapter 20. For those who know, you know, I'm getting there. It's getting there. And please check out my latest work, Dark Wings, S. Reut, R-O-I-T, available on Amazon in all countries. And I do the covers for those as well because I left my publisher a while back for reasons. They shall remain my own. Okay, I'm really done now. Yeah, that's it. Pow, 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 pow. And don't get eaten. I don't know. Unless you really want to.